Welcome to Heaping Spoonful, a twice-monthly conversation with restaurateurs, chefs, growers, and others who have helped generate the legends associated with eateries across the Mid-South. The team at Benny Keith is proud to sponsor this adventure with the goal of preserving the stories that have helped cultivate an amazing food scene across the Mid-South. So kick back and enjoy A Heaping Spoonful.
Greetings, everybody out there in podcast land, and welcome to Heaping Spoonful. I'm your host, Kelly Bass, and I really appreciate Benny Keith Foods giving me the chance to visit with many of the top chefs and restaurateurs across the Mid-South on these podcasts. I've been a foodie before that term was even invented, and for the better part of 30 years, I had the privilege of writing dining reviews for a couple of Little Rock newspapers and then later some magazines, long before the internet gave everyone a chance to be a food critic. But I will say I have learned to love talking about food much more than writing about it. So today our guest is Brian Deloney, owner and chef at Maddie's Place in Little Rock, Arkansas. So welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Yeah. First off, let me say that, you know, I absolutely love the food at Maddie's Place. I haven't had the chance to eat at that many of the restaurants that are featured on Heaping Spoonful, nor really to get to know the chefs and owners as well as I've gotten to know you. And I think our friendship harkens back to a long night at a hog roast.
Very long night.
Downtown North Little Rock. Yeah. I met several folks out there.
Yeah, I think we all did.
Yeah. But I digress, as I'm known to do. So on Heaping Spoonful, we rarely work through things chronologically, but it seems to make sense here. So you're a Little Rock guy. You graduated Little Rock Central High School, and then you went off at some point, and you can fill in the blanks on this, you went off to Culinary Institute of America in New York, which is, I mean, I think it's safe to say the preeminent culinary school in the country. So tell us what made you interested in cooking at all, and what if anything, you did between Central High School and CIA?
I went to Fayetteville for a little while until they asked me not to come back. And
you're not alone.
Pledged a fraternity and got blackballed. It was my brother's fraternity, and they asked me not to come back, so started working in pizza places, just really having a good time and not really caring about things. I always cooked kind of growing up. My mom was junior leaguer, so dad was throwing fish sticks in the oven all the time. And I just started dabbling and just having fun with it. And, wanted to go to culinary school, talked about it. They said, no, we're going to go to Fayetteville. And so that didn't work out. And they really said, okay, if you're seriously interested in this, go up there. There's a little class for like 2 weeks you take and just check out the school and see what you think. And I fell in love with the school.
Cool.
I mean, it was almost a military school. Your neckerchief had to be perfect, clothes perfect, shaven. I mean, it was serious business. There was no joking around there.
Well, that's cool though. And you know, one question I like to ask culinary school graduates, are there many things you learned there that you put into practice every day in your kitchen, or is it just more of a something you needed to do? Like I had to take calculus, and I don't think I use calculus.
Right. Now, this school was totally designed for cooking. I mean, it's like anything. It gives you a super good base ground of knowledge, but you have to put that into effect in the kitchen.
Right.
I mean, you can read all you want about it, but when it gets time to get down and hustle in the kitchen and put the food on, you know, you have to do it daily to hone those skills.
Right. And, you know, one thing that I have learned from doing these podcasts is that attending a prestigious school like CIA is that it opens doors. I mean, I know it can open doors for internships and then for full-time jobs. So walk us, our listeners, through, you know, kind of your CIA experience or where that took you and what you got to do based on getting that culinary degree.
Well, that can be a double-edged sword. You know, a lot of restaurants think, oh, this guy thinks he's a chef just because he graduated school, right, which is not true. But so that school does have a reputation for that. And I've seen that out in the field. You know, I probably fired more CIA guys than I have ever really gotten to know and like.
Right.
They come in with this attitude, oh, I'm CIA. You know, it doesn't do that. You have to get out and put out, and you have to be able to show on the line that you can handle what's going on.
Right. So what was your first gig right out of school, or did you get to do anything during school?
During school, in between your 2 years there, you have an internship, and I went to a bed and breakfast in Connecticut. And so after I graduated, I went back there for a while, just kind of seeing where I was going to land next, and came back home, actually, and ran Cafe Prego when it was back in the old location and moved it to the new one.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Then I ran La Scala in the Afterthought for a while, and during this time, that's when I met my now wife, Angela.
Oh, I see.
And so she was graduating from Euler, and She said, I'm going to go to Austin, Texas. I said, can I go with you?
Yeah.
And then we took off. And so we spent 2 years there and then just wound up and said, let's go to New Orleans, you know?
Did you work in restaurants in Austin?
Yeah. It's a place called Gilligan's Seafood. And it's kind of like a Caribbean style seafood restaurant down on close to 6th Street in that area. Yeah. So it was a great place. We loved it. We had a blast there.
What was Angela doing while you were down there?
She was just working, doing some accounting business. And she didn't go to school for accounting yet. She did that when we were in New Orleans.
Okay. So you just picked out Austin because it's a really, really cool
town. It's a cool town. We love music. I mean, we met some great people and still talk to several of them. And
yeah. So the same thing. You just said, well, we're going to go from one great city of Austin to another great city of New Orleans.
I grew up kind of going down to New Orleans and that coast. My parents always did, and just always loved New Orleans. And, I mean, obviously for, you know, several reasons, music and food and drinks. I mean, it was everything.
But you went down there without a job.
No job. We packed up and just took off and hit the streets a little bit. And that was kind of, you know, Emerald was coming up and I didn't really know much about them. And I just kind of was applying at restaurants and applied at NOLA down there. And the chef at the time was a CIA graduate, so we kind of hit it off, and I went in there as a line cook, and moved my way up the ranks super fast. And
yeah, so I have been to NOLA, and so I mean I would think that has to be a fairly high energy, high volume type of kitchen.
Yeah, it's high. It's everything's to the roof. I mean, it was serious business.
Yeah,
and you get going in there. There's a line at the door at 5 o'clock. Down the street.
Sure, and I mean, I guess it's kind of, it wasn't baptism because you've been working in kitchens for years, but I'm sure that was like, wow, if I can do this, I can do about anything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was great. I loved it. I mean, there's nothing better than getting slammed on the line and you pull yourself out of that and you just look around and you're like, man, we just kicked that right in the ass.
I know, that is cool. And I bet you time goes by quickly.
Time flies by.
Because, I mean, you are hustling. I'm an old newspaper guy and, you know, we'd be grinding at deadline, cranking out copy and, you know, laying out pages and doing stuff. And it's an adrenaline rush for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get done and
you go have some beers with the guys and
talk about what you did.
Get ready for the next day.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. So you moved up. So you ended up becoming something other than just a line cook.
Yeah. I wound up being an executive sous chef at NOLA.
Wow. I'm sure at some point he's like, wow, you know, that's a long way from, I mean, nothing against Prego or La Scala in the afternoon.
Oh, it's completely different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the big leagues.
It's the big league.
So from there, I know that you went to Las Vegas.
Yeah, they asked me to go out to Delmonico, which was the busiest restaurant in the company.
Yeah, which is in the Venetian Inn.
Yeah.
Or not Venetian Inn, the Venetian Hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so same deal, you went out there as executive sous chef?
Yep, went out there as exu. I mean, I sort of knew some of the people out there just from, you know, being in the business at Emerald's NOLA for 5 years.
Right.
So it was very familiar, and they, you know, we just packed up again and said, okay, why not? We don't have any kids or anything. Let's go to Vegas. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I've certainly been to Vegas several times, but I've never even thought what it might be like to live there.
It's awful living there.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved my job, and she had a great job too, and we enjoyed our jobs and met tons of people we're still friends with, but it's very transient, people coming and going all the time. And, you know, if you were to go to a regular bar, they still have video poker in the bar. So you cannot get away from gambling, even at the grocery store in the beginning. And it's crazy.
I've been to I like to bet on horse races. And I just remember sitting in a horse book in one of them and the Wheel of Fortune slot machines right outside the door. And I just heard Wheel of Fortune over.
You just hear those bells walking into work every day. It gets old.
So, I mean, Emeril Lagasse is a larger than life celebrity chef and restaurant owner. Did you actually get to know him?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, when you're top management, he knows who is there. I mean, don't get me wrong. He'll still rip your ass. If you're not doing what's supposed to be happening, he'll get you.
Yeah.
Well, but we also did functions, you know, outside of the restaurants. Did one function at this estate up in Lake Tahoe. Well, Robin Williams just gets up and does a 15-minute little stint.
Oh, sweet.
He's back in the back messing with us as we're cooking the food for this thing and just getting on Emerald, calling him fat. I mean, it's hilarious. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
That is so totally cool. What would you say that are like the most important things you learned from working in those restaurants and from maybe an Emerald's influence clearly was present everywhere?
Sure. You know, we basically built an HR policy around us coming through the ranks. We didn't have one when I first started there because we only had a couple of restaurants. But as he's building more restaurants, they knew that HR was going to be huge. So they brought on some great people that, I mean, I basically got paid to learn, which is fantastic. And I mean, to this day, I still reference a lot of stuff that we learned coming through there.
Yeah,
I mean, just HR is so important as being an owner of a restaurant that people don't understand.
No, and I will tell you, this is probably our 27th or 28th Heaping Spoonful episode. And one of the many consistent themes is the right people and taking care of the people.
You know?
Because, as you know, you're one guy and you're really good in the kitchen, but without everybody else,
absolutely,
wouldn't be able to pull it off. So you were in Vegas. You and your wife decide maybe now's the time we want to try to have some kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And once she got pregnant and you realized it was twins, it seemed like maybe the time is like, we could use a little help.
A little help would be good. And, of course, I didn't really want to raise kids in Las Vegas.
No.
It just didn't seem like the right thing to do.
No. And so you had family here. Your wife's from Hot Springs. So you had a safety net might not be the right word. So you guys said, we've packed up before. We're going to pack up again.
We're going to pack up and go back home and see how this all plays out and what happens in the future.
At that point, did you say, at some point, once I get back to Little Rock, I want to have my own restaurant?
It was always in the back of my mind. I think both of us, we knew it would happen.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, look, you know, you'd learned from some of the best. You'd proven yourself. And, you know, no restaurant in Little Rock, Arkansas, whoever it is going to be as intense as those two Emerald restaurants.
Exactly.
I mean, it can't be. No. I mean, it's just doesn't have, we don't have
the volume. It's different levels. We don't have the volume, you're right.
And, yeah. You know, in the Venetian, I mean, the thing about the Venetian is, I mean, it's a huge hotel and casino, and so you're going to have all the people who are staying there, but then people flock to an Emerald restaurant from everywhere. So it's going to be crazy. All right, so we're going to take a short break here on Heaping Spoonful, and we'll be back in just a bit with Brian Deloney of Maddie's Place.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Heaping Spoonful. We at Benny Keith Foods enjoy talking about the food scene almost as much as we enjoy providing the top quality ingredients that help restaurateurs and chefs across the Mid-South create their magic. Now let's dive even deeper into the culinary world with your host, Kelly Bass.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Heaping Spoonful. Our guest today is Brian Deloney, owner and chef at Maddie's Place, a stalwart on the Little Rock, Arkansas dining scene. So you all came back, the Capitol Hotel, by far the nicest and boutiquiest hotel in Little Rock, was about to reopen, and you went to work at Ashley's, the then name of the fine dining restaurant there. Was that just, again, you just started applying and they hired you there?
I just kind of caught word that, you know, they were reopening it and thought maybe this is a good avenue to get us back to Little Rock, and it turned out to be. Yeah, and I was executive sous chef for the hotel, I mean, which I was kind of over all of the banquets and the Capitol Bar and Grill and Ashley's.
Yeah, right, because for those, and again, sadly right now, and we're recording this in late November of 2020, the Capitol Hotel has not reopened. And
right.
That has knocked a big old hole in my business lunch scene, because that's where that Capitol Bar and Grill is a good place to chat up people and have a, you know,
absolutely, it's a fantastic place.
Have Tim Stramwell make you a drink, for sure. So you were working in there, and I mean, I don't know. Once you'd done what all you'd done, it would seem to be hard to say, well, okay, you know, now you guys tell me how you want me to do it here, because I know how I've done it before. But I guess you just jumped in and started making good food.
Basically, yeah. I mean, it was under Lee's guidance, but, you know, he gave us a lot of freedom and let us kind of do what we wanted.
And I tell you, that kitchen, I mean, you just look at who's come out of that kitchen, you know?
Right.
I mean, and I know you all weren't all there at the same time, but I mean, you know, Matt McClure's, you know, James Beard, finalist, you know, doing the Hive in Bentonville. And Matt
Cassidy and Matt Bell. Travis. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Great, great group of guys.
Yeah, that's super. So how long, you weren't there too terribly, what, a couple of years?
No, not even 2 years, probably a year and a half.
So how did Maddie's Place come to be? I mean, did somebody walk up and say, hey, I think I'd like you to do this, or did you just go, I want to find a property? Or
it was kind of friends that were trying to get something going in the location and just couldn't get it going, and they just kind of hit me up and said, hey, what do you think? I said, let's do it, and did it.
Well, that's cool. Was there ever any doubt, you know, someone said, okay, Brian, you're going to open a restaurant. Was it like, okay, I know what I'm going to cook, and what you cook at Maddie's Place is what you knew you'd do for New Orleans roots?
Right, yeah. And, you know, I kind of did, I don't want to call it Cajun Creole cuisine, you know, because it's just, I call it Southern with New Orleans influence. Of course, we have po' boys, things like that, but we really take our, you know, spins off of other dishes and make them Maddie's dishes.
Yeah, because it's there's plenty of things on that menu that are not typically, you know, Cajun kind of
right
stuff. Interestingly, for those who are familiar with the Little Rock restaurant scene, Maddie's place is in the building that originally housed the Faded Rose before Ed David and his family built a larger version right next door. And you both have New Orleans influences, but the menus really aren't that similar. I think if people said, what are the two best New Orleans influenced restaurants in Little Rock, Arkansas, those would be the two, and they're sitting next to
you. Right. And Ed, and I mean, I've really gotten fortunate to know them for so long, and they're great people, great family. And we talk just about every morning, either with Zach or Ed when they come do their stuff. And I'm always up front. And
yeah,
they're really great, great family. And they've been there 35 years. I mean, they've done something right, obviously.
Oh, they have. And, you know, we were talking before we started recording that, you can look out from your kitchen and see so many familiar faces. And that's the same with the Faded Rose.
Oh, absolutely.
Every successful restaurant that's in it for the long haul has that kind of loyalty.
Yeah, you depend on your loyal people all the time. You always want fresh faces in there, but you got your crew, you got the normal crew that's going to come in for the day.
Right. And you got your lunch crew, and I'm sure you got your happy hour bar crew too.
Absolutely. Yeah, we got several different rounds of crews.
I've seen myself sitting at that bar enjoying the good stuff that you serve, liquid stuff. So like all good restaurants, your menu changes a bit from time to time. I actually revisited the dinner menu just a couple of days ago when I was thinking about this podcast, and I think I didn't see my favorite, one of my favorites, which was the chicken thighs and the risotto.
I took those off when we opened back up just because I didn't think it was going to travel as well as I'd like.
That's a good point.
And some of the things that are not on the menu that were are for that reason.
Because a lot of people are still doing.
A lot of people still doing to go.
But what are the things, I mean, that clearly you can't take the po' boys off. What are there other things that are just like, these are the.
Basically that whole menu is. That's why we kind of resort to specials. Yeah, I mean, if I take something off, I'm going to get flack from somebody someday somewhere. Even if we didn't sell a whole lot of it, all of a sudden when I take it off, they all say, well, where's that tomato bisque? And they, you need to bring it back. And I just get it constant. So that's why we depend on our specials. I let the guys have fun. You know, we buy certain things and just play with it. And
sure. Yeah. Well, one of the things that I've always liked about your restaurant is consistency, and the food is always great. God, that peanut butter pie.
Oh man.
That stuff is good. But I see the same amazing and helpful and, you know, very customer service oriented servers that for years. So I guess you've had folks who work for you pretty much, not maybe the whole time you've been open, which is almost 12 years now.
Almost 12 years, yeah.
But you've had some long...
Many of them have been there several years, and some of them come and go. They come back, and they go try something and realize, you know, maybe you have it better than I thought, and they come back, and it's a big family. We've all been there together for a long time. It affords me not to have to be there all the time.
Right.
Which is, you know, for a restaurant owner, is great.
Well, yeah, particularly because you've got, a couple of young kids and things you like to do outside of the kitchen.
Yeah, and that was my goal, was to be able to raise my kids and enjoy doing it. You know, as a chef, some people don't always get that.
No, you're right.
They miss out on a lot, and I fortunately have not had to do that.
Well, and the thing is, you paid your hardcore dues before they were born.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking 80-hour weeks every week when running those big restaurants.
And, the Friday and Saturday night are your busiest night.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the time you got to be there to make sure stuff's going right. So, as I said earlier, we're recording this episode of Heaping Spoonful in late November of 2020, so COVID-19 remains, unfortunately, a necessary topic to discuss. So tell us about when you closed, for how long, when you reopened, and whether you did any kind of curbside or anything while your doors were closed.
We did nothing while we were closed. We shut down, you know, in March, whatever, when they said no more indoor dining.
Right.
My food, I just didn't feel like was going to do that much to pay the bills as that was going on, and staffing-wise. So we just told everybody, go get an unemployment. You know, we didn't think it's going to be as long as it was.
Sure, nobody did.
So, I mean, we kept saying, okay, a couple more weeks. And it turns out it was 4 months.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the extra bonus kicked off of unemployment, and I knew I wanted to get all my crew back. So that's when we just said, okay, we just have to reopen and see what happens. And we'd taken time. We had plenty of time to paint, clean, adopt all these procedures we do now. We have all these rolling plexiglass dividers that we put in between tables and this air conditioning filter system called iWave that supposedly kills everything.
Right.
And humidifiers that spray an ion disinfectant that's, you know, safe for anything. My wife, like I said, she works at Episcopal school, and at that time they were trying to figure out what they were going to do for school, and she was working with the nurse there and very helpful to us, and we kind of adopted a lot of stuff from her.
Sure. And so when did you reopen?
At the beginning of August.
Beginning of August.
Yeah.
And has business been as good as you could have hoped?
They were until this recent, you know, kind of spike. It's kind of slowed down, and takeout's gone up a little bit. But it's also this time of year as well, the holidays and everything. But,
sure,
you know, there's no proof that eating in a restaurant is spreading the disease.
No,
but we are the ones that constantly get picked on the first. We've got to shut restaurants and bars, which make no sense.
Well, other than you can't eat with a mask on, but I understand. And we've done a lot of, and you have a nice patio, and I would, you know, I'm sure people are, when the weather's nice, which it's, we've been lucky, it's still pretty nice for late November.
Even when it's cold out, they still sit out there. They'll bundle up and eat out there.
Sure.
And, you know, everybody's doing their own thing right now. What makes them feel comfortable, and I understand that.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, again, one of these days we're going to look back. Hopefully all the vaccine news looks promising, and if we can just get it, everybody to actually take it once it comes out,
right,
we'll all be back to our somewhat normal, although never quite the same, I'm sure, sort of existence. Well, listen, I appreciate you, Brian, for being our guest today on Heaping Spoonful.
My pleasure.
Keep cranking out that great New Orleans influence food, and set back a couple of orders of those steak and blue cheese meat pies for me. That is, I never don't get those for an appetizer.
I understand.
Oh, they're good. All right. Thanks to everybody listening to Heaping Spoonful today. Remember that new episodes are posted the first and third Tuesday of each month. So keep an eye and an ear out for those, and check out the ones you might not have heard. All right. Thanks, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Heaping Spoonful. On behalf of all of us at Benny Keith Foods, Mid-South Division, please know how much we love connecting you with the legends of the culinary scene and their unique stories. I look forward to the next time we can offer you another Heaping Spoonful.